When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey rockers, today's guest is Ephraim Schulz, lead vocalist for the Orange County, California hardcore punk metal band, Death by Stereo. Together we break down the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the fan favorite single, Forever and a Day, taken from their 2005 album, Death for Life. This track was a huge departure from the majority of Death by Stereo's catalog up to that point in their career. Ephraim explained that this was a calculated decision amongst the band, as they wanted to try something a little bit left of center. I commended Ephraim with bettering himself for this album when he hired world-renowned vocal coach Mark Renk to help him with his delivery and technique. I love that perseverance. The band are all amazing players too in their own right, and the production team of Fred Archambault and Bruce McFarlane, better known as The Factory, completely slayed both the recording and the mixing. Sonically, this song sounds incredible and not dated at all, considering it's closing in on 20 years since its release. Oh, and Ephraim is a dear friend, dating back almost 30 years. It was so cool to catch up. So for all this and a discussion about anaphylactic shock, don't you dare go anywhere.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
Ephraim!
What's up?
Dude, I realize that I have known you closer to 30 years than 20 years.
Holy moly, dude. Yeah, I have known you that long. Wow, dude.
I know. For our listeners, you know, it's crazy because
30 years.
Yeah, you were just party buddy Ephraim that knew these knuckleheads that I knew in this band One Eye Open.
Yes.
And one of the craziest, I've talked about them on either this main show or our after party. I know I've talked about One Eye Open before, and
amazing.
Crazy, crazy band. You can't even try to pigeonhole what their sound was, but I knew you through them.
And their guitar player, Tim Owens, will tie into this episode with this song.
Yes, of course. So Tim Owens became a member of Death by Stereo. Now, you know, this is pre-internet, so 1998.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you guys formed the next year. You put out your debut album, If Looks Could Kill, I'd Watch You Die, in 1999. Yep. Around that time, I started hearing about this band, Death by Stereo. There's some chatter going. It was probably 2000, so 2 years after you formed this band, I finally connect the dots and realize that Ephraim's singing for this band that's getting big. I'm going, what's going on? I mean, we used to sing like Striper songs and Dokken songs together, but I didn't know you had an ambition to be a front man.
Dude, it's so bizarre because circle around 30 years later, I just went on tour with you.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Which I gotta say something about Ephraim. You know, you're one of the guys that works super, super hard in this business. I'm looking at him right now. He's in his skate shop Fullerton, California. Fullerton?
Yes.
Yeah, in Fullerton.
Yes.
And besides Death by Stereo, running a skate shop and everything else you have going on in your life, you also front the Voodoo Glow Skulls now, who were just on the road with Less Than Jake.
Yes, I do. And that tour was so awesome.
It was.
It was so good.
It was. And
I had such a good time.
And I know I've told you this, but you know, you definitely have your own style in Death by Stereo. And I really feel like that's really you coming out. You know, when you do your own band, like that's your emotions, that's your spirit and your energy coming out. You know, you stepped into a role that, you know, a lot of people might say, you know, they're the former vocalist of Voodoo Glow Skulls. Oh, he couldn't sing. He was just barking and doing this. But it's like rapping. Dude. or it's a different type of a way to use your voice. His grunting. His syllables, how they come out and how you're able to step into those shoes. I know it was tough for you. We talked about it, but you're doing it flawlessly.
Oh, dude, it was really hard. I don't think people realize how much power he sings with, mm-hmm. and how much he's pushing out, and that much power on every syllable, you know, every consonant. It's just, you know, I mean, I feel like I'm playing the horns, you know, like I'm a trumpet player or something. It's so much power you have to push. And dude, Frank is so good. Like anybody that ever asks what I think, I go, he's so good. People don't realize.
Right.
It's a tough one, man. It's a tough one, but I it's made me a stronger singer. I feel like my lungs are just like, boom, so powerful now after being in Voodoo.
You come off stage and you're drenched every night. You absolutely give it your all. And you, as you know, I've told you this, you bring such a great energy to the band. If you guys haven't seen him, go check out the Voodoo Glow Skulls. But, you know, getting back to Death By Here, this song for
yes, sir.
Forever and a Day is from your fourth studio album entitled Death for Life, released June 7th of 2005 on Epitaph. This is a different song for your band, man. And
way different.
And I have to ask, by this point, you had been a band for about 7 years. You had been on Epitaph for about 4 or 5 years at this point. Your second your second album came out Day of the Death on Epitaph in January 2001. So almost 5 years at this point. Was this a conscious decision to try to write songs that were a little more digestible to the mainstream? Because that's what this sounds like, but it doesn't sound like a sellout move.
You know, it's an the whole way this song and this whole record happened is so weird. Coming out of the last record, we never really talked about it much, but on the last tour we did on the record previous to it, this kid died at one of our shows. He fell out of a window.
Oh.
And dude, like, I'll never forget coming home from that tour and, like, just telling everybody, I don't want to do this anymore, you know? And we were all super depressed. And, like, I was like, we're done, you know? And then everybody kind of at the same time maybe had some personal little struggles at home, different things. And it was just a weird time. And then we found our way back to each other and we were like, no, we don't want to do this. That'd be, you know, like, I feel like we'd be dishonoring the guy by quitting, you know? And we started playing again. And then Dan, who, you know,
of course,
the best ever.
Yeah, well, real quick, Dan Palmer, who also plays guitar for Zebrahead. He played on this track and was in the band at the time. Go ahead.
Exactly. And he ends up writing so much fucking heavy and dark shit. The heaviest shit we'd ever written, you know what I mean? He took us just straight into metal.
Right.
You know, and I feel like we were becoming a metal band. And within that space, like, it kind of made sense that Dan, within that, wrote this really delicate but dark tune.
Yeah.
You know, he had this idea. And while we were writing it, this song had become different things through its journey into becoming what it became. Because also at that point, all right, well, we want to work with a metal producer. We went and got a metal manager that could help us do that. And we ended up, we wrote the song and started working on it with Matt Hyde, who did God Hates Us All for Slayer.
Yes.
So we were doing it with Matt Hyde and we started working on the record with Matt Hyde. But at the same time, our bass player, Paul Miner, who was writing with us, his producer career was exploding. He was becoming a very in-demand record producer. Yeah. And just life was changing for all of us. And in the middle of writing and all that, like, Paul left the band. So we were like, oh, we were spun out. So then we were searching for a bass player in the middle of writing the song. And then we find Tyler from the band Bully, who is mm-hmm. a total shredder.
Yep.
And we all worked on the song with Matt Hyde together. Then there was and me and Matt are really cool now and everything, but like there was a disagreement between our managers and Matt Hyde, and then the whole project got halted. The song got recorded at Paramount Studios with Matt Hyde with no vocals. Nobody knows where it is. And then we had to go get another producer and start over again. The whole record.
It's crazy. Let me jump in real quick. So the album was produced by The Factory, which is a production duo of Fred Archambault and Bruce McFarlane. But
exactly.
First of all, the production on this is killer. It sounds like it could be released today, but when I went to research these guys, it's like they went to be stockbrokers or something. You can't find anything about them. what are they doing?
So Fred,
dude, I researched it high and low. I can't find a damn thing about these guys.
It's so good. We met Fred through our management, who was working with a guy called Mudrock.
Of course.
Who was doing...
Yeah.
Okay, you know Mudrock. And he mm-hmm. was working with Avenged Sevenfold.
Yeah.
We were friends with Avenged Sevenfold. We still are. And there was a whole thing, you know, they led us to that. And they kind of helped us find our way through that situation with their attorney, Larry Jacobson. He helped us a lot in that. He was kind of messing with us at that time, too. Just... It all just kind of fell together through multiple people. And Fred was working with Avenged Sevenfold. And so then we switched over to Fred, and Fred introduced us to Bruce. We have this new production partnership, and Fred had been working with Paige Hamilton, Gavin Rosdale, some really cool projects that we loved the way it sounded. The Paige Hamilton helmet stuff he was doing just had that heaviness that... Like, oh my God, dude, you know, like,
yeah,
I remember being like, dude, you know, Paige Hamilton, holy shit, you know? And, so they took over. So the song got rearranged a few times, and, and I left out the funny part, the initial demos that we made on our own before we even got to Matt Hyde or any producer were the last band. We did all our demos on a 4-track.
No one was doing 4-track demos in 2005.
No, it was CD. Remember, it was CDs. You bounce down to a CD and then get a
here reference. I got a cassette for you. Go buy a car with a cassette player so you can listen to it.
I know. We were so just stone-aged, just dudes. We had a 4-track still. Like, oh, let's just do this. You can buy the tapes at the 99-cent store. You know,
and whatever works, right?
Yeah, and that's what the demos we were showing these big producers. You know, it's just funny. But so finally, we got to doing the song, and when it came time for me to what I wanted to write about, I have this lifelong friend named Stephen Cordero, and I wanted to write a song for him because he means so much to me, and he went through so much through our life, but I wanted to write it in a way to where, like, only me and him knew, and the whole world would think it was about a chick.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
I did. And but it's so funny, though, because I thought where you were going with this just now was this was going to be about the fan that had lost his life at the show.
No, which there is another song about him.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And it was such a dark, beautiful song. And my friend Steve Cordero, who is just a beautiful human being, man, the funniest dude I know. When I was a kid, you know, both of our families had our different hardships or whatever you'd say. And when I was really young, his family was so supportive of ours and really, like, always welcomed me in. I hung out at their house every day. I would skate to their house after school every day and hang out. And he and his family really introduced me to music. His grandfather had all these instruments at their house. So, like, he's, like, completely, really directly responsible for me getting into music. And Steve was the first drummer of the band that became Save Ferris.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Connect the dots all day long here.
Yeah, exactly. So we just used to always jam together and stuff, and we're old friends. And one day, you know, Steve went through a lot. I mean, a lot. And then he came down with, I'm going to say it wrong, monogonococcal meningitis, and was dying, and survived. And fucking, I just kind of wrote about all of that and our experiences growing up and everything he went through. And I wanted him to know that I'd be there with him forever. That's what that's about.
Okay. Well, we're going to get into the song in a second. I got a couple things real quick. Matt Hyde was on the list to produce a record for Less Than Jake around this same time period, which is crazy.
He's the best. He's so good.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Yeah, he was on the list of a couple guys. We ended up not working with him. There's also, this is crazy, there's also a piano version of Forever in a Day, which is on the follow-up album, Death is My Only Friend, from 2009. It was produced by Jason Fries, who Josh Fries' brother. Jason also does Time in Green Day. He's their guy for their live shows. So that's insane, which tells me that he heard a beautiful song within this already really cool, beautiful song that could be translated to piano.
I can't take away this fever. I can't take away the pain. But I will fight with you forever.
Lastly, I gotta ask, what did Brett from Epitaph think of this song? Because I'm gonna tell you right now, I used to say this song should have been a hit. I don't say that anymore. I say when I think a song could have been a hit, you know?
Right.
And if right. a band like, you know, your contemporary, I'm calling it your contemporaries at this point, not Death by Stairs necessarily, but this right. song could have fit perfectly on modern rock radio at the time it was released. If Disturbed or somebody like that, the bands, the modern rock right. metal bands would have recorded this song, in my opinion, it would have been a hit. What did Brett think of it? Because the song's awesome.
Brett was all about it. He actually made him and Jeff Habarda at Epitaph came up with a radio edit for it. And the problem was that everyone around us was telling us, oh, there's too much screaming, there's too much screaming. So they did a radio edit. And to be fair, it did, oddly enough, dude, this song and this record did so well in South and Central America.
Oh,
it was insane. We went to play the Dominican Republic, and I was like on a morning cooking show, like with Tyler from Philly, like eating a sandwich. Que rico! Like, you know, like, and Dan's on a radio show the same morning. And, you know, same thing in Costa Rica, same thing in Colombia. Colombia, the biggest headline show we'd ever done, ever. In Bogota, dude, like it just unbelievable.
Wow. So it was a hit for you guys.
Yeah, it did blow up, and internationally, I'd say in the States, the record previous to it did better. Internationally, this record did better, and people know the song in Europe, but especially South and Central America, man, it was just wild, and it just kind of came and went. You know what I mean? Like it was just like here and gone. You know, but it was just like wow, what is going on? And you know, Colombia. Going to the hotel, they got to drive you the weird way to get there and all that, you know?
Yeah.
You're just like, whoa, you know, like, dude, it was crazy. But
it's a weird feeling when that happens to bands like ours. And because big bands, but we're not superstars, you know? So we've never had bodyguards. I walk wherever I want to walk. And we're down in South America, Colombia, the first time. They're like, oh, no, you're not going to the mall by yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're not. You know,
the dude that's in the van picking you up has like a gun.
Yeah.
He's like
yeah.
a security guy.
No, I know. And you're like, wait a second. Oh, gosh, there's so much here, dude. Before we jump into the tune, I promise we're going to get there. Okay.
Yeah.
I understand. And if you did, I think this is awesome. I understand you took vocal lessons from a guy named Mark Rank during this time.
Yes.
Is that really?
So weird. You know that.
Well, it's so crazy because like, wow, you're really singing in this. I knew you could
Absolutely.
Sing. I knew you could sing, but yeah. I didn't know you could sing like this. Could you sing like this before Mark? Was he there to teach you how to properly sing or was he working on pitch and notes and things like that?
I feel like I was getting there over time and he taught me like a few different things that kind of unlocked a couple doors I just couldn't get through and taught me how to get past thinking like, dude, that's so out of my range. And he would do these vocal exercises with me that would get me up to that range, kind of trick me into it almost. And he'd be like, you did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And he taught me a lot about letting go and just not being afraid to be myself and just letting my voice come out, you know? And I didn't realize how important that was. And also, when I was recording the vocals for that record, something else interesting happened to me during the making of that record. I have a nut allergy.
So do I.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah. I'll die if I eat them.
I ate something wrong, you know, and I was having a snack in the space, and I look over at Tim Owens from the band When I Open. I look over at Tim Owens, and I'm like sweating. I'm like, God, it's so hot in here, dude. You know, and he kept being like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't know. And I got so unbearably itchy. And I was just, I don't feel good. And then I remember Fred being like, dude, you're getting sick, man. Get the fuck out of here, dude.
Yeah.
You know? And he's like, go. And so I go and I walk out to my pickup truck and everything starts getting blurry. My eyes still won't stop watering. My whole body got so itchy. My feet started swelling.
Ugh.
And I like took my shoes off. And then I got on my sidekick probably at the time. You know?
Yeah. That's around that time, mid-2000s.
Exactly. And I'm like, hey, man, I don't know what's wrong with me. I need help. I can't see. And they came running out, and then they pushed me over to the side, and they just drove me straight to the emergency room. I went into anaphylactic shock.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, and then so I came out of that and my voice was trashed. And Mark Rank, I love you, Mark Rank. He just sat there with me. I went straight into him, and Epitaph found him, got me linked up with him. And I think he worked with Paige Hamilton too.
Awesome. But,
and he just kind of nursed me back, you know, over the course of some days, and then like got me right back in. And then like the lessons I got with him, he really just taught me to open up. And like, I think a lot of things, it was just, it's all mental. I feel like I was really soaring after my time with him, you know?
Good for you. I've wanted to go to a vocal coach forever, just to maybe unlock something I don't know that's inside me. Yeah. So you've inspired me with that. And I want to get into this this bad boy right now, because you and I could sit here and talk all day, okay?
Oh, David. I'll go on and on. I've thought of 30 stories within stories already, and I'm not even going there.
I know. I'm not even. I keep a notepad here to write. You know? Yeah, I'm not writing down other stories with Ephraim. Okay. The song is 5 minutes and 5 seconds. The intro is 8 bars of clean arpeggiated guitar. Bars 9 through 16, the second half, the guitar continues as drums come in along with these guitar swells. They sound like volume swells. Is that what those are?
Yeah. And also there are strings in there. There's a string arrangement. Probably a cello sound happening at that moment.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, a volume swell, you'll hit a note in a guitar and the volume be down, and you'll like put the volume up, and sometimes you'll go very fast. Steve Vai is a master at volume swells.
Oh, dude, he's incredible.
But the volume swells are going on left and right. We got that synth that Ephraim just mentioned. The first 3 root notes of the guitar part, the third swell hangs over the fourth note, which is really cool for tension there. I love that. And then we go right into verse 1.
Did you ever wonder, will I make it through this night? Did you ever wonder, will I live for sacrifice? Have you ever wondered, will I ever see the light? Have you ever wondered, can I live another life?
I'm going to read through what I'm calling the pre-chorus, because I think the last 2 lines are actually a setup for the chorus, but I'm going to read everything so there's,
right,
for context, we kind of have to. Did you ever wonder, will I make it through this night? Did you ever wonder, will I live for sacrifice? Have you ever wondered, will I ever see the light? Have you ever wondered, can I live another life? Can I live another life?
That's all about my buddy Steve. And a little bit about myself, you know, because we were both going through a really hard time. We went through a really, really rough time together, you know, and we were really, really good friends in school. And we felt really outcasted and didn't really connect with anyone but each other, you know. And music, I think, saved us both. You know, it was kind of me asking him, you know, do you think we'll ever see the light? I almost feel like maybe, can I live another life, is me imagining him asking me that.
You know, it's funny when we talk about mental health, and you know, for men, we don't like to sometimes admit these things. You know, you're
right,
taught to not be weak, as you know, from the time you were a young boy. But it's crazy to hear you talk about this, because you're one of the most positive people I've ever met in my life. To me, you know, you're so up every time. I mean, I've never seen downtrodden, depressed Ephraim, but I haven't been locked in a van with you in a band either. So. He won't come out of his hotel room. He's been in there for 4 days.
It's so great, dude. That is brilliant. Nah, you know, I think the things that you go through when you're younger just make you stronger when you're older, man. You know what I mean? And like, it made me a positive person, I think.
Awesome. Well, there's a lot of moods in this song. And the mood here in the intro in the first verse throughout the whole song, especially when we hit that bridge lead part. And then the whole half, second half of this song is like, it's like a metal song. You know, it's, this goes through a lot of twists and turns. I love it. I have to ask, and I don't hear it until later in the song, but this sounds like a single tracked vocal here. You weren't doubled here on the verses, were you?
No, I wasn't. I think we just found something that was real and emotional and went with it, you know?
Yeah, sounds really full and great, but it doesn't sound like it was double tracked. Right. There's clean guitar harmonics, panned off slight left that are killer here. It's awesome. There's a high synth part tucked in the mix on lines 1 and 3 only. And I love what that does there for context. And then the last line, and I'm calling, "Can I live another life?" When you say that twice, I'm calling that the pre-chorus. And as soon as you say life the first time, that's when the big stereo guitars come in and there's more harmonics that take us into chorus number one. And that four-track demo you had, I can't imagine with the limitations of four tracks, how you were able to orchestrate something like this song. How bare bones was that?
I just sang it just by myself. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It was just a lead vocal, you know? And then when we got in this, I could hear so many things in my head. I would tell one of the guys, "Hey, give me a whoa," at the practice space, you know? And when we got in the studio, I tend to go into the studio and I build it out right there. Like, I hear everything in my head and I hear all the stacked harmonies. I hear everything. And I take it a piece at a time. All right, we got done with this verse. Let me build up all the harmonies on it.
I mean, I can't believe I don't know this, but do you fumble around on guitar at all? Can you get around on it or no?
Yeah, I can get around on the guitar a little bit.
Okay.
Not like Palmer or you know what I mean? But
okay, enough. So
I can strum some chords and sing and play at the same time.
It's interesting. I haven't heard anybody say what you just said on the show, really, except for D. Snyder. So D doesn't play anything.
Really?
No, but he wrote all those Twisted Sister songs. He would get there with the guys and he would hum guitar parts. You know.
Okay. And I've been similar things with our guys.
That's,
you know,
so
I'm
cool.
I'm really lucky to be surrounded by people that can read that vibe too.
Yeah, and I've told people, they're like, "Well, I don't really know. I hear these songs, but I don't know how to play an instrument." I'm like, "Just get them out like Ephraim does, like you know, like
that's, yeah.
I've exactly. told them, like, just sing it out to somebody, and maybe someone can hear your vision."
Yep.
But chorus one comes in here, and again, unless it was such a locked double, I don't hear a double on your voice here. Do you know if the factory, the production team, were they doing? Were you double your voice in unison?
They were putting secret sauce on stuff. They were, you know what I mean, reverbs and delays and all that. They definitely made it real drippy, but it's mostly not doubled vocals, you know? I mean, obviously the harmonies are super stacked and doubled, you know, but
this chorus is probably one of the poppiest things the band's done, you know?
Yeah.
This chorus right here. I can't take away this fever. I can't take away the pain, but I will fight with you forever, forever and a day. I can't face this world on my own. I keep on searching for your face. I promise that we'll live forever, forever and a day. Chorus one comes in at the 1:03 mark. What's going on?
Those were all the thoughts in my head in the time when my friend Steve was in the hospital, you know? And I was saying, like, dude, if you... They were speculating he's fine now, which is a miracle, but and it's so rad. But they were speculating he'd be in a wheelchair forever, you know.
Oh gosh.
And the thoughts in my head at the time were like, dude, you're my best friend of my life. I'll fight with you forever. I'll be with you forever, you know. And dude, you've been my friend this whole time. I can't do this without you, man. You gotta fucking pull through this, you know. And he did.
Hey everybody, don't go anywhere. We got lots more with Ephraim coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
To all the guys out there listening, we all know first impressions matter. And if you're not taking care of your skin, people are going to notice. They'll either think you're way older than you are, or that you just don't care about your appearance. Well, show them you do and make a great first impression with Caldera Lab. I try to make skincare an important part of my everyday routine, just like brushing my teeth and flossing and styling my hair. It's just as easy and sometimes even quicker with Caldera Lab. Caldera Lab creates high-performance men's skincare products, and the regimen leads off their product lineup, a twice-a-day routine to transform your skin. Skincare has been the Wild West for men for years. That's why they've made the solution simple. It's three products. The Clean Slate, which is a face wash to start and end your day. The Base Layer, which is a daily moisturizer to hydrate your skin. And the Good, which is a go-to multifunctional serum that helps your skin look tighter and smoother. They also have the Icon Eye Serum, which addresses the three most common skin concerns around the eye: fine lines, dark circles, and puffiness. 1 minute in the morning and at night is all it takes to reduce your skin wrinkles, fine lines, and signs of aging. Clinical trials have found that 94% of men's skin showed an overall younger-looking appearance after using Caldera Lab for a few weeks. So now is the time to see what it can do for you. We have an exclusive offer for Krista Makes a Podcast listeners, and it's the best offer available anywhere. Use the code DEMAKES at CalderaLab.com and get 20% off right now. Get 20% off with code DEMAKES at CalderaLab.com and make unforgettable first impressions that lead to the confidence you deserve. That's 20% off at CalderaLab.com with code DEMAKES. You'll be glad you did.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like chocolates.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
And now back to the show.
You know, you mentioned the South American crowds. They are so into the anthemic. I think everybody is in music. They like to put their fists in the air and, you know, sing those anthemic songs. But what a lyric, though. Who can't get behind? But I will fight with you forever, forever and a day.
Dude.
I mean, it's not surprising that this lyric popped there.
And dude, like, it was so cool hearing a giant rooms and giant festival crowds. Whoa!
Yeah.
You know, like, it was like, what is going on right now? You know, like, this is so bonkers. Like, it was
cool. I'm so glad you got to experience that. Cause again, this song to me, and it was a hit. It was a hit for you. But I said, a lot of those bands that were on modern rock radio around this time, you know, with their money and their and their push and whatever. There's a lot of factors and a lot of luck too that happens with hit songs. But
We were kind of started doing more metal tours. We'd become a heavier band at that time. And we had a lot of great people really trying to push it in that direction. It was an interesting time for us, you know.
I'm telling you, some of my favorite records were the records where the band branched out and they said, we want to try something a little different here. And when they did that, it brought up something. It brought out a different side that I think sometimes the band didn't even know they had, you know, like how I'm sure this song, when some of your fans heard it, were like, whoa, what is going on? Because it was such a departure, but a lot going on in chorus one. Stereo guitars, bass, drums get really big and loud on the crash cymbal of the drums. There's tambourine that comes in here. There's that synth, that haunting synth running underneath, combined with all those backing vocals at the end of each line. That's really cool, those textures that we hear. You talked about that orchestration earlier. Were you hearing that in your head, or was this kind of created in the studio with the production team and yourself?
I think that I had thought that strings would be a good idea, and they reached out to an arranger, and then he just sent it to us. He did some strings on a couple songs for us and just sent us that, and like right out of the gate we were like, oh, this is killer. we didn't have to change a thing.
Okay.
Incredible. So, but it was all synths. But he did strings on another two other songs, I think, but yeah.
Did Fred and Bruce, the factory, the production team, did they mix the record, or did you go out to someone else to have them mix it?
They mixed it.
They did. Okay. Yeah.
This is the whole thing.
Like I said, it's awesome. And real quick, we kind of got sidetracked. Did they ever do anything after this? Was this kind of it?
Fred kept working and has worked on tons of records.
Okay.
But, I lost touch with Bruce, man. I don't know what happened to Bruce. I just don't know.
Well, we're going to find him. Crazy.
Oh yeah. We were at a little, we did the drums at Sound City.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yep. And then Ton Recording and The Scene was also credited as studios.
Yeah, there was a studio in Echo Park called Ton Recording, and they rented it out and brought all this gear in. It was just this little local studio. They brought all this gear in, and then Bruce's house was like walking distance from there.
Oh.
So the guys were just cutting stuff and sending it right to Bruce, and I was at Bruce's just jumping into vocals, dude. We were working like in tandem, like trying to just get it done. Like, it was crazy.
That's awesome.
We worked at quite a furious pace.
Well, verse two comes right off of chorus one. Arpeggiated guitar part is now played palm muted. The drums and bass are in with those guitar harmonics. The synth is running underneath everything here. And we got these ah-ah backing vocals, which are just, again, I'll use the term haunting. They're audibly loud here in this verse, which I think is really cool.
You bleed without a knife. You're searching, losing power. Your whole life has been a fight. You keep on giving selflessly. The world keeps on taking selfishly. You keep it bottled up inside. Feel the sting. Let's take another
In your darkest hour, you bleed without a knife. You're searching, losing power. Your whole life has been a fight. You keep on giving selflessly. The world keeps on taking selfishly. You keep it bottled up inside. Feel the sting. Let's take another ride. Let's take another ride.
Steve used to steal his mom's car when we were younger, and we'd go on these crazy fucking rides, man. Like, oh my God, dude. You know what I mean? Cross people's lawns, doing burnouts, doing donuts in places. We'd go out all fucking night, dude. All night. I mean, I can't believe he pulled the gas pump out of the thing one time, dragging it down the street. I can't believe we never got in trouble. And he would just bring it back, park it, and just like nothing happened. And I just like wake up on his floor like in the morning, like, oh, hi. You know,
yeah.
We would go crazy. But, you know, I was basically singing about Steve and like how he's just this nice, nice guy. And I felt like, man, you've kept all this bottled up inside of you, and you just get it out by being crazy and going around town and just fucking shit up, dude. We would go buck wild together, dude, and like just go cause trouble, you know? And it's kind of like, man, you keep it bottled up inside. Let's just go take another ride then, dude.
I could see why this was misconstrued by people as a love song, because you know, but you know, like lovers, but it is a love song between friends, and that's why it was felt totally that way, I think. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
100%. And still my great friend to this day, dude. But yeah, it was just basically me kind of painting a picture of like, dude, you're such a nice guy, and you've been so fucked over so many times and yada yada, like fucking, man, let's just fuck it. Let's just go, you know? And it's also me kind of saying like, I need you, man. I need you. Cause how are we ever going to go ride again? You know?
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, something else, you know, I always talk on the show about hooks within songs and these guitar harmonics throughout. I've always loved what harmonics make me feel like, just what they can do if they're played well and used tasteful in a song, and they are here. I mentioned the drums and the bass are in here with all those guitar harmonics, that synth part running, a lot going on here. I love the second line. You say losing power in this cool, low, different voice. And
yeah,
there's a different thing there. Was that
characters?
Different. Yeah, was that
very conscious?
Yeah, was that something that the producer said, "Hey, try something different," or is that just something that came out, or were you hearing that in your head? It's a very interesting note choice there.
I came in with that.
It's great.
I knew I was going to do that. I really like with Death by Stereo. I like that it's a thrash punk metal band, but a lot of times I like to approach the vocals like from a Danny Elfman perspective, where there's characters in the song, or like Jello Biafra, where I think sometimes you have to go so over the top and almost act it out theatrically to get your point across lyrically, you know? And so that's kind of me. I don't know what you'd call it, acting it out, you know, you're losing power.
Yeah, it's a,
you know what I mean? It's very dramatic.
It is. It was almost like Swedish symphonic metal or something. Like where'd this voice come from?
Oh, I love that. You know, there's on different records, there's been different parts where I in my head, I think, all right, character voices, really get the emotion across so people feel it, you know? And I've always wanted this kind of little bit of like a spookiness to it, a Nightmare Before Christmas-y little sprinkle on top, you know?
Yeah, like, no, it's really cool, and that really stuck out to me. Something else that's great, the last line, when you say, feel the sting, that's a different way that you said it there. It's a different enunciation. Yeah. I like that. It puts emphasis on those words, and there's a great guitar harmonic swell there that goes through the next part, which the lyric changes here on pre-chorus too. It's let's take another ride two times. Same instrumentation as before, but the bass run this time is killer.
Woo! Let's take another ride.
Finger player, Tyler.
Yeah, it is so good.
Big tone.
Yeah.
Big sound.
I've always loved that with parts that are so good, and I was guilty of it, especially as a young musician, be like, dude, put that the first time too. And it's like, no. And the greatest bass players, they know they're good. They have restraint. They're like, no, we'll just put it on the second one.
Totally.
Yeah.
Because that dude, you've seen Pulley over the years. He is unbelievable.
Ripper. Yeah. Yeah. One of the best bass players in the genre. Hands down.
In the game, dude.
Yeah. Yep.
Woo!
For sure. Well, right off the heels of verse two, we get into chorus two. Basically the same instrumentation as chorus one. I was listening for things here, Ephraim, like, are the synths louder? Are the whoa-ohs louder or anything?
Right.
I really couldn't discern if they were. It sounded a lot like chorus one. But interestingly enough, this is the last chorus in the song.
Yes.
And that didn't hit me until this morning, and I've been listening to this song a bunch the past couple days, okay?
That's so
and
cool.
finally this morning I get to it, I go, it finally hit me like a ton of bricks, like, wait a second, this is where the chorus, and this is only halfway through the song, which is crazy, about halfway.
I can't take away this fever. I can't take away the pain, but I will fight with you forever.
We get into a bridge. It's instrumental for two bars. There is a new octave guitar part along with bass and tom fills into four more bars of heavy drop tune guitars that come in. Am I alone inside this glass box? I can't shatter from inside. Can you tell me? Can you tell me? Will we make it out alive? Come on, come on. Let's take another ride.
It's me, I guess, putting myself in his shoes and then thinking back to when I was younger and the shoes I was in then and like how we both felt trapped, you know, like in our lives. And I just wanted to like And we're fine now. It was just like we had to shatter our boxes to get out. And I found my way and I found my life and I found happiness and joy. And
I wanted to ask you about that line. Am I alone inside this glass box? What were you trying to paint there imagery-wise?
Like, we all can't be alone. Like, I'm singing this song because I know other people are going to hear it and be like, fuck, fucking me too, man. Like, you know, like, fuck, let's, we need an anthem for the fucking not cool kids, man. You know what I mean? Like,
I had mentioned a second ago about those whoa-ohs. I love the whoa-ohs here. And I also love that your vocals for the first time in the song, they're up an octave. And you're screaming your head off. And like, when it got to this point, I'm like, okay, there's Ephraim, there's Death by Stereo.
Yep.
But it's really cool how you meshed that together. And I have to ask, you know, this song up to this point was so different for you guys and something very special. You know, you could have went into a bridge and then did a chorus out and that was the song. Was there ever that discussion? Like, we don't want to take this too metal or we don't want it to sound too much like our old stuff.
It definitely came up. And there was a lot of discussions about, you know, where are we going with this? You know, I remember even when the first inception of the song at rehearsals, Paul being like, whoa, like, what are we doing, guys? You know what I mean? And Dan just being like, this is, you know, this is what I got.
Because you could have played it safe. You could have went into a traditional departure bridge for 16 measures and then went to a double chorus out and that's the song. But I love where you went here with it. Those whoa-ohs are killer here. This bridge to me really, Ephraim, is the second half of the song. The first half is the ballad and the second half is the heavy part. It's like that Testament song, the ballad.
Oh, I love Testament so much. So good.
I know. That's why I had to jam it in this episode with you.
The whole other episode.
On the last line, come on, let's take another ride. This ascending guitar riff here with the bass and drums is just, it is so, it gets me, that part gets me hyped.
What those guys did together and the bass following the guitar through that crazy hole.
Yeah.
Like, it was pretty mind-blowing. I feel like it was really a moment of realizing, like, holy shit. Like, I'm like, damn, Dan got so good. You know what I mean? Like, I just watched Dan's playing just really jump up a notch on that record. Like, he was so good always, but he just... it was just like he spread his wings.
No, the dude is just next. He's next level. I listen to him warming up every night. We were just on the road this past summer with Zebrahead for some shows in Europe. And he's got this little practice amp and he sits over there and just, you know, and I don't think I've ever told this in so many words. You don't want to like tell your friend that they're blowing your mind, you know, and like.
Yeah.
But the dude's just, he's next level. He's so good. Hi, Dan, if you're somehow listening. But,
I love you, Dan.
The guitar solo comes in here, which... again, Dan Palmer, this guitar solo is just shredding.
So Dan is known as the soloist of Death by Stereo, but on this particular song, if I'm not incorrect, Dan played every guitar on the song, but this is the one song where Tim Owens played the solo.
Tim played the solo.
That's Tim's solo, dude. It's crazy.
It sounds like Dan. That's crazy
it totally
to me.
Does.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Tim was a very underrated guitar player, dude. Like,
oh, I know I know Tim was great. No, but I'm saying, I know he's great, but you know how you know somebody, it's like Eddie Van Halen. You know it's him playing guitar. I don't care who picks up the guitar in his same amp configuration. It's not going to sound like Eddie. And
totally.
Dan definitely has his own style. I thought that was Dan.
I think everybody does. It's wild. And Tim killed it on that solo. And for everybody that's a fan of the band, we're talking about Tito. He became Tito During his time in Death by Stereo, Tito became his nickname. So everybody knew him as Tito forever.
Was that from Tito's Vodka?
I think it was from Tito Jackson.
Tito Jackson. So yeah, the guitar solo is 24 bars. On bar 4, we get a no-no from you. And then on bar 8, we get a rah. Yeah. Was that just you going, there needs to be something here? Were you, a lot of times guys will be warming up in the vocal booth and they'll just do it, you know.
Right.
Was that planned?
When we jam at practice, like sometimes I just kind of like vibe with the guys, go. Yeah. And I do it different live, you know? And and so sometimes when we record, I'll be like, just roll the tape, you know, just roll it. And I'll just throw in a couple. Yeah. I'll just try and feel it like hip hop.
Yeah. I love those little things, those little flourishes. Yeah. And I especially love it live, as you said, because you could do it different every time. And it doesn't matter. It's just your personality coming across.
Totally. And sometimes when I hear a solo in my head and in my heart, I'm all, you know, like, yeah, when he does it. And so I'm just like, sometimes I'll just do it, you know, like,
yeah, you're feeling it. Bars 17 through 24, there's insane riffage leading up to verse 3. There's a guitar harmony at the end of the solo for a bar or so panned off right.
Yeah.
The last 8 bars of this section, the guitar is feeding back and the stereo guitars are doing this killer walk up before we get to verse 3.
Oh, dude, with the bass.
Yeah.
Little Mozart part. Really classical sounding.
And I can't imagine verse 3 not being here. It's so perfect. But you could have went into a chorus here. Was there a was there that discussion? Do you remember?
Yeah, we wanted to have like a really hard, crushing end with a like kind of a crescendo. We wanted the song to be a journey with peaks and valleys. So build it up, explode, and then release at the end. That was the whole vibe, man. We were really trying to paint a picture. And Dan just murdered it with that arrangement. Dan is like such a great arranger, dude. It's insane. And yeah, that was very intentional. And building up to that screaming verse, just kind of like everything built up. This is our fucking rage, you know?
Well, that killer walk up takes us into verse 3. And right off the top, we get this ow from Ephraim. And in your darkest hour, you bleed without a knife. You're searching, losing power. Your whole life has been a fight. You keep on giving selflessly. You keep on taking selfishly. I think you say keep on there, right?
No, I say you keep on giving selflessly. They keep on taking selfishly.
In verse 2, these are almost the same lyrics, but in verse 2, you say the world keeps on taking selfishly.
Yeah. Yes, I
okay.
do say that.
So there is a change up here. And then the last line, it's the same lyrics as verse 2, but there's no let's take another ride.
Right.
You just say take another ride. Was that kind of improvised?
Very freestyled, very improvised. A lot of the screams, a lot of the stuff all over that record was stuff I was just feeling in the moment. And I would just go back and be like, I'll give you like, you know how you do. I'll give you 3 more of these. You know what I mean? And sometimes we just went with the one. Sometimes it was a one take on the record, but I think there was a good amount of one takes. Some I would just do harder and harder and harder just to try and get the hardest scream I could till I was blown out, you know?
Well, you're screaming your head off here and it's awesome. I got to ask, now, and you may not know, maybe the production team, the factory did this, but if there's anywhere where there is doubled vocals, it sounds like it would be the back half of this song. Do you know if they unisoned your lead vocal at all, or is that just one? I can't tell.
On the screams?
On the screaming part here, yeah.
I want to say, did we double those screams?
If they did, they're so locked that I can't hear a rub anywhere. It's really edited well.
I don't think we did double those. No, those screams are not doubled. They didn't have vocal align yet.
which for those who don't know Vocal Alliance, a very nice little program. The whoa-ohs after each line are awesome here. There's really great synth stuff, and the drums, bass, and stereo guitars are just super, super loud and killing you here. Out of this part, we go into what I'm calling a post-chorus, but there's not a chorus before it, so I don't really know what you call, maybe the outro. Yeah. This is like the outro of the song. And you say, let's take another ride. Yeah. Forever, 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 forever. We get that said 6 times. Everything is in here, including an awesome new octave guitar part. And these whoa-oh backing vocals, they're tucked in low here, but they're mixed with such a great delay.
I'm glad you like the feel, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. That was definitely trying to get like a feel and just like a... It build up to this big thing, but then we want you to feel vulnerable again at the end and just a little shook, you know?
And I can't put my finger on what I'm calling, and I've only had maybe 4 or 5 songs out of a couple of hundred episodes I've done here or whatever on the show. I've never, this is only like the 5th time where I've said this is a coda, and I'm calling this a coda, this last part of all the right. song, okay? Because it's just, this part's great. And all you say is day, forever and a day, and you end with the word day. It's just a vocal, and it sounds like a nylon string acoustic guitar to end the song here. Kind of reverts back to the ballad feel from the beginning, and kind of ends almost a little morose. This part reminds me, and I can't think of the band. I want to say Maiden, but it's not. It's like an outro to an 80s metal song, and I can't think of it. That's the feeling that I get from it.
Totally. Kind of like a the end of 18 in Life.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, so that spooky guitar outro, you know? But that's the only thing I can think of. But it's interesting. So even though this was a song, was a departure for us, and the album was a departure for us, in my head, I'm still thinking about hardcore punk shows and the crowds. What can I write that I can get something from the crowd? Because in my head, day, forever, and it happened.
Yes.
At the end of every night, I would just say day, and then I'd put it out, and the whole crowd would... Forever and a day. It happened every time. It was really cool.
For the visual, everybody listening right now, Ephraim's holding up the mic. So he's saying forever, and then he's holding the mic out for the crowd to say it. And hearing that back is awesome. But what were your thoughts now? You had been in a band for a number of years at this point. Okay, you're on Epitaph Records. You guys are out there doing it. You're making a living as musicians. Okay, you're living the dream.
Incredible.
What was it like hearing the mix back of this song when you first heard it? Because this is now almost 20 years later, and this song sounds as fresh today as it did then.
I was pretty mind blown, I'm not gonna lie, and also I was so happy because I felt like, man, I always knew I could sing melodically, but no one ever wanted me to.
Yeah,
you know, and I wanted to prove to everybody like, look what I can do, man. And I remember feeling so proud because, you know, Mark Rank was like proud of it too, like proud of me, you know. And I remember sitting in the blue room at Epitaph, which was like the meeting room, and you have your meetings about marketing and creative stuff, and them like listening and hearing a couple of the people in the office being like, whoa, man, like you're like totally different, you know. And it made me feel really proud, man. And if it's a That record's a cool accomplishment for me, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because it is an accomplishment. And the fact that you were able to, you know, as we get older as musicians, we get stuck in our ways and ego and all kinds of things take over. And it's like, you know, you went out and got a little self-help with the vocal coach. That's very commended. And listen, my friend, again, I could sit here and talk to you for another 2 hours about nothing. I love
you. This is so awesome.
I love you, man. And thanks for,
I love you too, dude.
Thanks for sitting in.
Thank you for letting me be a part of this. I'm totally a fan. So this is awesome. Your podcast rules. So thank you.
Thank you. Before we break, what's going on with Death by Stereo? What's happening?
Death by Stereo, we're writing riffs, we're doing new stuff. Everyone's been so busy with their lives. We haven't been able to do much, but we started playing shows again. We're planning stuff for next year. Voodoo Glow Skulls is going to be in Japan in November with the band Hey Smith. And we'll be on the West Coast with the Slackers in December, and all over the country with Mustard Plug in January. Manic Hispanic is playing a big comedy event October 11th. Check out our socials.
How could I forget that? That's yet another band you're in. I left that out earlier. Yes.
Hey, man. If you have another band, I'm your
band. I do have another band for you and I.
Let's go.
Yeah, it's called Death by Almonds.
Yes. Yes. That's amazing.
Or Walnuts, whatever.
We'll have a great writer. Allergen free. It'll be beautiful.
That's right. Our first record's called Anaphylactic Shock. Out soon.
Anaphylactic Shock.
All right, buddy. Thanks so much.
Love you, dude.
Hey, everybody. I hope you all enjoyed that conversation with Ephraim as much as I did. But don't go anywhere. There's lots more Krista Makes a Podcast coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your best song via MP3 only, and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Project Revise, a three-piece pop-punk band from the UK. The band has been featured on a number of Spotify editorial playlists, as well as BBC Radio. You can find their music on all the streaming services. Here's a snippet of their song, Just a Story.
Waiting here, searching for, it's just a story to you. Give me a reason to waste my time again. Like a fire flying, illuminates the sky. The world is yours on your own.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
So, Chris, that was a really fun episode. I like it when it's an old buddy of yours who comes on and you could tell that they're just having a good time talking to their friend. I really like that, and I think that the listeners will really feel that, too. I also think it's really cool that Ephraim wanted to come on and discuss a song that's so personal to him and that's so different from the rest of the band's catalog. For anyone who's not familiar with Death by Stereo, they're a super thrashy band, and this is so much different from anything in their catalog.
Yeah, they took a step in a different direction for this record. I commend it. A lot of my favorite records were from bands that, you know, they had someone pull a different side out of them that they hadn't shown the world before, and there's definitely... This is definitely a different side for Death by Stereo.
Yeah, definitely. I really liked hearing about the way he writes songs. And yeah, you said it's how Dee Snider does it. He hears the songs in his head and he's surrounded by people that he can describe to them what he's hearing in his head. And they're talented enough to take that and translate it and bring it to life. I think it's a really cool way to write a song. I've never tried to write a song that way. Just describe it to the people around me. I always have a bass in my hand or a guitar in my hand or something, and I'm doing it that way, but that's a cool way to go about it.
It is, and it's foreign to me, only in the sense that there's been times when I hear something in my head and I go pick up the guitar and I can't replicate the idea. That happens sometimes where I can't figure out what I was hearing. And then the idea just goes away. If I didn't have a voice recorder or something, I'm like, ah, you know, the riff that never was. But, you know, before we go any further, Chris, I have to say, and I had this in my notes, I didn't mention it for everybody out there. Little fun tidbit here. Ephraim made a cameo in the Less Than Jake Dope Man video.
Yeah, you told me that before you recorded. That's wild. You guys really have been friends for a long ass time.
Yeah, I told him going on 30 years, closer to 30 years now than 20 years. Known him forever.
Hey, when you listen to Death by Stereo, it's almost as if he's intimidating as a vocalist. You wouldn't imagine that he's such a positive, upbeat. I mean, from the second he came on here, I'm like, I like this guy. I want to be friends with this guy. Just such a positive and uplifting guy to talk to. And, you know, wouldn't you be a little intimidated if you heard Death by Stereo, that guy, that voice? You know, wouldn't you think like, oh, I'm not messing with that guy?
Absolutely. And his persona on stage, he's menacing with both bands, with Voodoo Glow Skulls as well, as we talked about in the episode. There couldn't be two different bands stylistically, vocal-wise, than Voodoo and Death by Stereo, and he does them both flawlessly. He stepped into shoes in Voodoo that's not an easy vocal, a band to try to emulate those vocals. And yeah, his whole personality too, he's just the nicest guy in the world, and you're like, he fronts this like crazy metal band.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of vocals too, Chris, it's so cool to be able to just be like, hey, I want to step up what I do. I don't care what it is. I mean, go to a vocal coach. Yes, of course. Whatever instrument you play, anything you do in life, even if it's not music, to be able to say like, there's always somebody better than me out there who can teach me something about what I do. And to be humble enough to step into that and accept it and try to better yourself. That is so commendable. That is awesome.
It is. You know, Ephraim's one of those guys that I knew could sing. And I thought maybe that's what he went to the vocal coach for, was like notes and this and that, wanting to brush up on hearing things. I think his ear was always there. I think he wanted more technique. And it sounds like what he got from Mark.
Yeah. And also when it comes to vocals, I like that you guys are talking about those little impromptu things you're feeling in the moment in the studio on a record that can make a song so much more special and less sterile. Mm-hmm. Recently, we've been doing these Punchline podcasts where we're going back through all our old albums and talking about them. And on some of our early albums, we'll do things like, there's a song where I go, the song's about to kick into like a fast part, and I go, here we go, like on the record, I do that. And I'm laughing because I'm like, I probably wouldn't do that now, because I'd be like, no, you can't do that on the album. But I think it's cool that we did stuff like that. It just adds so much life to it, you know?
It does. It's cool, except when your A&R person at the record label hears you do it on a demo and wants you, and you were just joking, and I'll give you the abridged version of this story. But I was doing the demo for Automatic, and right when I got up to step up to the vocal mic to sing the first line, I think I know it all. Just before that, I said, sick cow. And that's what Greg Graffin from Bad Religion used to do. Yeah. These, like, it sounded like he's saying like, sick cow, like sick cow.
Right.
Well, I did that before the vocal started. And our A&R guy, Craig Aronson, was just like, we got in the studio to cut the actual song for the record Losing Streak. And he's like, where's that thing you did? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, that thing. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? And finally he's like, that thing, you know? I'm like, that was just a joke. He's like, it's got to be there. I'm like, no, it doesn't.
He got demo-itis of your Bad Religion impression.
He did. He did. Yeah.
Chris, I also like one thing that I took away that Ephraim said is things that you go through when you're younger make you stronger when you're older. And I think you and I, and probably most people listening to this, know that. You know, if you go through a hard time, it makes you that much stronger. And I just like that. I like thinking about things like that. I thought that was cool that he said that.
It is. And this lyric in the chorus, you know, I will fight with you forever, forever and a day. And he talked about those South American crowds, and they're just so, I'll use the word again, anthemic down there, fists in the air, the whole crowd singing. They sing the horn parts. They sing the guitar leads. I mean, it is raucous. It's insane. And I can see why that lyric translated. And again, very different song for the band. And I really think that this is part of the reason why they're still out there. I think this album really pushed them and gave them a lot of momentum.
Hell yeah, man. And speaking of fists in the air, Chris, I know that our listeners out there have their fists in the air when they see that there's a new episode of The After Party in their feed.
What's The After Party?
It's our bonus episode that we release every week for members of our supporting cast. Yes, supporting cast is just a different type of thing like a Patreon, where if you love the podcast and you want to support the podcast and you want to get a bonus episode every week that we put a lot of love into, just like we put a lot of love into this podcast, you can go to chrisdemakes.com, and for the cost of an apple juice at the Cracker Barrel, you can support the podcast that you love and get bonus episodes every week.
Right, and that's a cost of an apple juice at a Cracker Barrel in Tennessee. If you're in the Los Angeles, California area, it might be a little bit more expensive, but okay. Anyhow, give Chris and I a follow on Instagram. I'm at Less Than Chris D. Chris is at Chris Fafalius. And go give me a subscribe on my YouTube channel. I'm trying to boost this thing up. I post some funny stuff in there once in a while. It's Chris to Makes Official over at YouTube. And I want to thank this week's guest, Ephraim Scholes, for sitting with us, and we'll see you next week.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series.
About how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app
and subscribe now.